We're talking now with Tom Albertson. He's the superintendent of schools for the Lake Pend'Oreille School District. Tom, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us.
Thanks, Chris.
As well as Lonnie Williams. He's a member of the Board of Trustees for the school district. Lonnie, thank you for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
So we're barreling down on the new school year. The first day of school is a bit more than 2 weeks away this airs. It's Tuesday, September 7th. In the old days, at this point, I would make a crack about, hey, kids, sorry to say that school's coming. But after these last couple of years with the pandemic messing up schools for school attendance for kids, I'm going to bet a lot of kids are going to be happy to come back to school.
Yeah, that's true.
So we want to talk about a variety of things in our talk this morning. But let's start with this. You know, what do parents need to know to get ready for the next school year? And Tom, that would probably be over to you.
First, I invite all parents to go to the lpoSD.org and our website. And that website then has our operational plan for 21-22. So that'll answer a lot of the questions there. And also will give you the start and end times for all the schools. But mainly what we're looking at here is we're going to have a full day of school. Last year we had a hybrid where we were in school from 8 to 1, but we will have all schools going anywhere, ending it from 2:20 to 2:50, depending upon where they're located and whether it's an elementary or not. So we're back to a full day of school, and you know, just a little side note on that, I think that's important, and we hear from a lot of constituents. Another concern that we have in our community is childcare. And having a shortened school day really did put a hardship on a lot of families. So I'm excited that we're going to be a full day. So so a lot of all the information as far as what they can expect will be on that website. And they'll also hear from their individual schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a bit more about the COVID protocols that are going to be in place. Is there going to be... we're going to have full day school.
Correct.
Are there going to be masking requirements or anything like that?
Yeah. At this time, LPOSD is optional face coverings. The school board voted on that last March, and that went into play April 12th last spring. And at this time, the LPOSD school board is continuing to keep that protocol in place. With that said, we strongly, you know, would recommend that any staff or families for students have students wear face coverings when our community is you know, realizing maybe a outbreak or a high contagious rate of COVID. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are.
And we are seeing the rate up. It's not as high as it was during the thick of the pandemic, but it's come up in the past couple months, I guess.
Yeah, I watch it daily. not that I like to. And I also have a weekly conversation with Panhandle Health District for the five northern counties. So I get a lot of my information there. And interestingly enough, last week Friday, four of the five counties were in a substantial red zone as far as COVID spread, but Bonner County was still down in the orange. And then I checked yesterday again, and you know, we did get a little dip yesterday down to 14.4 on the 7-day rolling average. Just be curious to continue to watch that to see if that's just a little blip down or where we're at.
I checked it yesterday as well at the Panhandle Health District, and they had placed us now into the red.
They did.
Which means substantial risk.
Correct.
Instead of moderate risk where where orange was. And what the health district reported yesterday was that over the... They don't do the reporting on the weekend, but they said there were 15 new cases in Bonner County over the weekend, which is a lower rate than we had at the, you know, the height of the pandemic, but it's come up. I mean, we had some days and weekends where we didn't have any new cases there for a while. It was looking really great. So do you have a figure on the number of staff that have been vaccinated?
You know, we're not a mandatory vaccination organization, but The best data that we have is last year, this would be January, February, when the vaccinations were first coming out, we needed to kind of get an idea of how many of our employees wanted the vaccination. And we were up over 350 that had signed up to get a vaccination. Now, we didn't track whether they followed through, but making a pretty good assumption that if they signed up that they were interested. And so I did break that out into certified staff, and certified staff are teachers and people who are actually in the classroom with students. And I would say that we're around 70% vaccination rate is the best data that I have. Now, I didn't track if there's some certified staff that went and got vaccinated after that initial.
Yeah.
I don't have that tracked, but so I'm going to guess that we're at least 70%.
Mm-hmm. And the county, according to the Panhandle Health District, our vaccination rate of the general population is about 41% right now. So that's well above that.
Right.
And it's interesting, the vaccination rate has been going up a little bit as this new variant is out there and infecting people. And I think some people are deciding to go ahead and get the jab now.
Right.
Lonnie, I'm curious, this has been a big issue for the Board of Trustees.
Mm-hmm.
How have the trustees been treating, you know, accepting comments from your constituents on how to handle the whole COVID thing?
It's been an interesting year for sure. We're very, very available and very transparent. Our phone numbers and emails are in the paper every other day. And we rely on feedback from our constituents in order to make, you know, to help us make our decisions on how we do things. And I get a lot from both sides. Not to be divisive, but, you know, to call it both sides, I think is fair. No matter what decision we make, we're in a very difficult position. It's almost a lose-lose no matter what. But, you know, we as a board, our job is to help with the education of the students of this district and do it in a safe manner. And I think that last year, you know, yeah, we came out and had our plan and stuck to it. And we had class 5 days a week all year long. And yeah, it wasn't the full school day like we were used to. It was modified, but if we look around our neighboring districts, we came out a heck of a lot better than some of our neighbors, which I think is a blessing, and we need to not forget that. Also, we've got a year under our belt dealing with this, and we've got a lot of vaccinated folks, so it's really changed the dynamic on our decision making. You know, we're just trying to make the best decision that we can for the education of our students while keeping them and our staff healthy. And I think that we did a heck of a job last year, and the district teachers and admin, you know, they poured everything they had into last year, and it went really, really well as it possibly could. I think this year, one of the most important things, just like last year, is sticking to a plan, having some predictability on what our kids are going to be facing every day, which trickles down to what our families can plan for. And that's, that's been a huge part of what we're trying to accomplish is let's make this predictable. Let's make it as normal as possible. And let's get these kids the best education that we can in a safe environment. And that's what we're doing, you know, and we're treating this seriously. But we're also trying to, you know, come at it with a level head and make the best decision for these kids.
Yeah, and assess what the actual risk is.
What the risk is. Yeah.
That's the key thing. And it was a big disruption for people that have arranged their lives around a certain schedule, especially as pertains to childcare, and to have that upended.
Right.
It's changing
it's a very big deal.
A lot of family, work days and patterns.
And Chris, if I could just add in there, I know, face coverings and vaccinations can be brought into the political arena, and our objective is to keep politics out of education, focus in on education as about the learning of students. And, as Lonnie said, there's always every day that's kind of brought into the arena wanting to make this a political statement. And so back to, face coverings being optional, you know, I think there's two ways to look at that. You either put a face covering mandate and then get a flood of exemptions, or you keep it optional and strongly encourage people to use the protective measures for their students and staff. So either way, you're going to have some people that are not going to be masked.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one way to look at that. And with the vaccinations, you know, every student 12 and above can go get the vaccination. And I really encourage families to look at those options.
Mm-hmm.
That's something different from last year at this time to this year. The main difference is the vaccine is out there and is available. Whatever people's opinion is on that, that is something that can mitigate, you know, COVID spread in our schools. So, mm-hmm. you know,
Yeah, we had last year we had no spread internally. It was non-existent. We were very, very careful. And, you know, blessed to have that outcome and not have to shut down schools. And I think that as long as we continue to be careful and, you know, keep going about business as we have been, you know, throughout the summer. I mean, there's a lot of people in town, a lot of people coming in and out of this community. And,
yeah, right now. Yeah, yeah. You bet.
And,
yeah, we've seen that a lot.
We're still doing pretty darn good.
And we didn't have to shut schools down, but there were disruptions to students' education.
Absolutely.
You know, students that tested positive, students that were close contact. And there were a few times where we had to take a whole class and, you know, put them self-isolate and quarantine.
Yeah.
You know, I think we learned from that and mm-hmm. We'll be looking at that approach, but through all of it, what I guess I've learned is the partnership with parents and parents monitoring their own students' health. And if there is any symptoms at all, please keep your kids home.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think with that, and we were blessed with great parents and people really taking that to heart. And I really think that can be one of the biggest impacts.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it be possible? Let's say your kid has got a sniffle or something. You're mm-hmm. not really quite sure. You think you should keep them home out of abundance of caution.
Right.
Would that child be able to sit in on some classes remotely?
Yeah, they'll be able to access the work. Now, to be able to sit in remotely will depend upon the probably the individual class, you know, maybe at a high school level, but they will at least be able to get all of their work on the learning management system, which would include the agenda, the resources they needed, what the assignment was, and then they could always communicate with the teacher via email. You know, we're not set up in every class to have a live feed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's some other issues with live feed too on liability purposes mm-hmm. with that mm-hmm. too. But mm-hmm. So yeah, but all students that do have their education disrupted will have access to their learning.
Mm-hmm.
So
corollary question to that. So how has the pandemic going forward into this new year affected attendance? Is it knocking attendance down because some people want to keep their kids out of school?
Yeah. Last year, the Idaho State Board of Education put in a temporary rule where school districts got to calculate their funding based on enrollment. That temporary rule has expired and legislators have not reenacted that. That's probably going to be hopefully in the 22 session coming up. So we're back to average daily attendance. So how we got to calculate for funding purposes, a student's attendance or enrollment is back to the way it was pre-pandemic coming into the school year. So with that said, you know, we're back to state statute says that all students are supposed to be in school 90% of the time. But the conundrum here is if they happen to get COVID or sick and we're asking them to stay home, they may not meet that 90% ruling. So mm-hmm. so we're still working with the State Board of Education and legislators and the State Department of Education trying to get some clarity on how they want us to record that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but to touch on, you know, what it did to our numbers last year. Yeah, we had a dip last year. This year, so far, the pendulum has swung the other way. I know that the middle school so far registration is up quite a bit over last year.
About 50 students.
50 more. Students more, which that's substantial. Mm-hmm.
And it reflects the fact that we are seeing people move into
exactly.
the area.
Yeah. Right. And
it's nice to have these people be young families. I'll say that.
Yeah, same at the high school, too.
We're not going to know the really enrollment until probably that week before or the first week of school.
Right.
So that's one unknown. Because district-wide last year, we were probably down 250 students.
Yeah.
And I expect this year that we'll be at least pre-pandemic numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, anything else we should touch on about the whole COVID protocols?
We kept, we've used some of our federal dollars, the ESSER dollars, to keep increased sanitization with our custodial staff. So we're keeping our cleaning protocols. We will really, the hand washing protocols, all that sanitization part. I've heard anecdotally from a lot of families that last year was, outside of maybe if they got affected by COVID, was one of the least infected as far as colds and those, just because of maybe the increased sanitization. We also use some of our federal dollars to increase our paraprofessional support, and we're keeping extra teachers on staff to try to keep class sizes lower to, like, I guess, social distance the best we can in classes. There's only so much we can do at that point, but also that's going to help address learning loss. So if we had students that were out of school for like a year or had a lot of disruptions last year, we know that they may be a half a grade level behind or missing some skills. So those extra paraprofessionals that can be in the teacher's classroom can pull a small group aside. And that's one of the big mitigating factors for us addressing learning loss. So we're using our federal dollars in that sense. And also, you know, we've gone out to bid to capital improvement plan to increase ventilation in all of our schools. So we're using some of the federal dollars that way. So trying to be as strategic as possible to hit some of the needs in the district without going back to the taxpayers. So
the biggest thing I think to just reiterate is the partnership with the parents and guardians. If your kid is sick, let's err on the side of caution. Mm-hmm. Keep them home. Hopefully it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, you know, that is a huge, huge mitigating factor to the spread is, you know, if kids are sick, you got to keep them home. We have to treat it like
it's not just about your kid necessarily.
Exactly.
It's about all the other kids that might be in that classroom. Yeah. And even if the chance is small that your kid might actually have the COVID virus, err on the side of caution.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, actually, while we were talking about budget, I wanted to ask you, the state this year is seeing a historically large surplus. Is that coming back to the school districts in a meaningful way?
No, not yet. Like I said, I think for last 4 or 5 years, there's been a lot of discussion of moving funding schools to that enrollment base instead of average daily attendance, and we would be a proponent of that. So hopefully there'll be some movement there, but basically we have not seen outside of the federal ESSER dollars, you know, large increases. I shouldn't say that. The teacher career ladder has been funded. There have been some things that the legislators have done to impact schools. I would like to see personally some help, whether it even be one time, in helping construction costs for buildings.
Yeah.
You know, some type of infrastructure dollar, not just operational dollars.
That's right. Yeah, so, as set aside as a separate fund, because we have some big facility needs.
We do.
That we are going unaddressed.
Yeah.
And, and we attempted, was it 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah,
we attempted
2016, I think.
Yeah, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. We attempted, or the district attempted a construction levy that did not go very far.
Right.
Yeah. So, and those needs haven't disappeared since then.
No.
They just probably are compounding, actually.
Well, they are. I mean,
a certain degree.
We are very, very lucky in that we have a fantastic facility staff that does a phenomenal job at keeping these district buildings in great working order.
Yeah.
But they're old. There's a big need there, and it's not cheap.
So I want to ask something that just popped to mind that I realized I need to ask about is one of the things the legislature passed this past session was a prohibition on teaching critical race theory in our schools. It's kind of an area that a lot of people don't even know what critical race theory is and how it comes into teaching. Is critical race theory taught in any of our schools?
We do not have a curriculum on critical race theory in Lake Ponderay School District, nor have we ever. We teach social studies, and we teach social studies based on the Idaho content standards. And within that, obviously, you're going to talk about some historical perspectives that might deal with, different races.
Well, with slavery, I mean, you cannot avoid these subjects if you're going to have a fully educated population. Right. And we have to know what the history of our country is.
Slavery, but also if we talk about, developing the Western country and taking, the indigenous people's
and putting them on
reservations.
Right?
I mean, that's history that we've been teaching forever.
Yeah.
So if people, want to call that critical race theory, we do not have a critical race theory curriculum, but we continue to teach history in that perspective. I also during World War II, the Japanese internment camps, I mean, I hear that topic coming up, but I think it's the standards basically want an informed citizens on our historical past. But as far as truly teaching a separate course or making one race feel apologetic for that is not in the curriculum, and we do not teach that, but we do teach a historical social studies curriculum.
Okay, well, we want to touch on some other topics pertaining to the school year. What about sports and extracurricular activities? Are they going to be impacted by COVID, or is there anything else that folks should know about that?
Time will tell.
Yeah, it's kind of a waiting game on that. We definitely dealt with it last year. So far this year, we're off to a great start. We have I'm trying to remember the number that David gave us the other day on.
I don't remember either. Record turnout. I mean, we got a lot of kids participating in activities. So the high school levels have already started. Mm-hmm. They're into their second week of practices. And I think middle school will get started when school starts. And so far we've had no cases reported within our programs, and they're practicing. Of more concern is the air quality, watching the AQI.
So that's put
a damper on them being able to practice outside. So
if it's not one thing,
it's the other.
It just keeps
on coming. We don't know if there'll be a disruption to sports schedules. If there's a team, your opponent had a positive COVID outbreak, it may cancel that game for that week or weeks.
And it may or may not get made up.
It may or may not get up. Some of our sports teams do play teams that are in the state of Washington, which may have some
totally different
protocols. But so far, we haven't heard of any. So, kind of off and going.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think, our coaching staff has done a fantastic job, and activities staff, but we can only do what we can here, and I think the impacts that we're going to see, if I had to guess, it's going to be impacts because of schools and other areas that have totally different operational plans than we do. That could potentially affect what happens down the road.
Yeah. It takes two to have a game, right?
Yep.
So, okay. I know you've had the school meals program going on during the summer. Anything parents should know about that going into the school year?
Yeah, we're going to, fortunately, I really like this, that the USDA has continued offering free meals to all students. So it's not just for the free and reduced and, those students that qualified. It's for all students. So that will continue for this entire next school year. So again, just like last year, that will stay in place. So I think that's good for all families and all students right now.
Yeah.
I think it's really important for parents and guardians to also understand, like, that's carte blanche across the board. There's no paperwork involved. Like, if your kid is hungry, they've got food.
Yeah.
It's taken care of, which is fantastic.
And you produce good, nutritious meals for them.
Yeah.
You know, each school, so if families are wondering what the breakfast and the lunch protocols are going to look like, they'll get that information from the individual schools. Mm-hmm. The size of the school is going to make a difference. You know, some schools will still continue to maybe have breakfasts in the classroom and try to not put all students in the cafeteria at one time, or stagger, so that we can try to mitigate and not have as much contact as, you know, with big crowds of students. So,
okay. Another topic here, parents of young kids, the kindergarten is available to them and they need to get registered.
Right. Again, on LPOSD's website, there's an online kindergarten registration, and or starting next week, I believe it's going to be Tuesday the 24th, all elementary schools will be open, so they can go in, and I please encourage them to register early. Don't wait to the first day of school or the second day of school. And the reason I ask that selfishly is, staffing is of an issue, and if all of a sudden at the very end we get this large influx of kindergarten students, we're going to be understaffed and we're going to have to hire teachers late. So the earlier we know of some bubble classes at the elementary that we need to increase or hire more staff, we will do that. But it's important that parents communicate out to their
schools. Think ahead there a little bit. Okay. And interesting story in the local newspaper that the district just accepted a bid for 3 buses with seat belts. So that's something different. When I was a kid, and I rode the school bus a lot, and there weren't any seat belts, of course. So tell us about the rationale behind that. Was that a school board decision to start using seat belts?
Gary Supiger, one of my fellow trustees, he's really championed that for a couple years. You know, we go out to bid every year. You know, we replace school buses every year as they age out, and it hasn't really been a viable topic. And this year, our bids came back. Not that you can put, you know, you can't put a price on safety of students, but I think it's becoming more and more of a standard in the bus manufacturing world, because it really was pretty darn close to the bid without restraints. So
I saw that number. It was only a few thousand dollars more to get seat belts on there.
Which hasn't been the case in the past. And again, I'm not trying to put a price tag on this or monetize the safety concerns here, but so this year we decided, let's go with this bid with 3 new buses with seat belts. And it's kind of my assumption that will be the way we go moving forward. And, you know, it's a step in the right direction for sure. There's a lot of different data on, you know, do we need them? What's the, you know, efficacy? How do we manage it, you know, from a school bus driver? Right, I mean, that's a whole nother ball of wax, but that's an important part of this whole topic is, okay, this is what we're going to do. We've got to figure out a way to implement this. And, you know, that seatbelt doesn't do a darn thing if it's not used. So it's another level of
And I'll just put it out there that we'll be using this year to start working on those protocols. So to families out there, it's not going to be a mandatory seat bus on those 3 buses, but not the others to start the school year. But it allows us to start transitioning our fleet over to having that safety measure. And then over time, we'll work on those protocols of for bus drivers and communication with family and students on that. So,
So I imagine there are school districts that have been using seat belts, and you can look to them to see what kind of issues they hit as they started to institute it.
Coeur d'Alene did the same thing last year.
I think
it was last year. They bought, that was their first go at it. So mm-hmm. we have a neighboring district that we can lean on a little bit.
Yeah, got a test case to take a look at. Yeah. So, well, anything else we want to talk to related to the school year? I do want to ask about the school trustee election that's coming up, but we'll say that for the very last. Any other topics you'd like to bring up, Tom?
Yeah, I guess I just really value the partnering of with parents, and I always say that a student's education is a three-way partnership, and the most important person in that partnership is the student themselves taking ownership in their education, and then you know we've got the parents, and then we've got the school district, school, teacher. So keeping that open communication is always so important, and I know that these are some challenging times that can be divisive, but I think it's only as divisive as we're going to make it. And I think if we could just, you know, have that open communication, and we may not have everybody agree with every protocol we put in place, but we feel good about, I think you mentioned it earlier, the consistency in our plan, and trying to work with parents so that they know, help with their schedules, mm-hmm. and also, you know, try to keep the students and staff as safe as possible. So,
okay, and again, great source of information is lposd.org, your website. It's got all the information on there. The calendar for the whole school year is there, and for the next school year even. Well, let's wrap up with a little talk on what's to expect for the school trustee election. There's three of the six trustee seats that are going to be...
Three
of the five.
Yep.
Okay. School trustee seats are going to be up for election. Those are the seats held by Gary Supergur, and he's the south part of the county.
Yep. He's like Kokalala area.
And Carrie Kelly, I think he's the eastern side of the county.
No, he's in town.
He's in town.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then Lonnie Williams, that's you, Lonnie. Mm-hmm. What district are you in?
I am zone three, which is west of 95. And kind of west of Division Street, mm-hmm. out towards Dover. So kind of north of Dover Bay, but out towards the county line that way, and then north all the way to the county line.
Okay. So those three areas are having trustee elections, and voters will vote just for the trustee in their area.
Zone, yep.
In their zone. Mm-hmm. I want to mention that the filing deadline to run is September 3rd. I don't know if anybody's filed yet, but Lonnie, will you be running?
I am running. Yep.
Okay.
Yep, I'm running.
Running for your election. This is your second term?
Yep, this will be my second term.
Okay. And I know that Gary Supergur has said he's going to be running again. Mm-hmm. I believe Carrie Kelly is not going to be running again.
That's correct. Yeah. Yep.
So that that zone is going to have an open seat. Mm-hmm. Although I guess they're all open in terms of the
correct.
Fact they're
yep,
up, they're all open. Up for election.
Yep.
So
that's true.
So anybody that is got the, is there any kind of training for, you know, wannabe candidates where they can look in to see what's involved in being a school trustee?
I guess my advice for any person looking at that would be to contact Kelly Fisher, and she is the clerk of the board. And she can fill any potential candidate in with what the responsibilities, time constraints, and what they would have. I would say most of the training would come after they were elected, mm-hmm. and that's through the Idaho School Board Association, and they provide training for new trustees.
They do. Yeah. Is it something they actually go down to Boise for, or they do it here regionally?
It rotates.
It rotates, yeah. Sometimes they have stuff in Coeur d'Alene, sometimes Boise.
And we can also invite ISBA trainers here to come in to work with our local board, mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Lonnie, how much of a time commitment is it to do the job where you think you're doing, you know, really doing it well?
It's, for me, it's probably, it's not huge. It's probably a few hours a week, I bet, that I spend on either getting ready for the next topic at a school board meeting, or you know, dealing with constituent you know, feedback and concerns and communications.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly times where you know we have two scheduled meetings a month. We don't always have our second meeting of the month, but most months we do. Those are usually around an hour, but you know, there's definitely, especially with, you know, last year, there was a lot of special meetings and extra meetings and executive sessions and stuff like that.
Dealing with the COVID, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, last year, there was a lot more time that went into it compared to previous years. So, yeah, it's not a full-time job by any stretch of the imagination.
And it's unpaid.
It's unpaid.
So, yeah. I mean, you're doing it because you believe in the work.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would encourage anybody that's thinking about running to certainly look into it. It's a very important civic duty. And, you know, if it's something that somebody is passionate about, definitely look into it. Mm-hmm. It's rewarding and fulfilling to be a part of this district and try to help in the direction that we're going with our students.
Yeah, it's super important work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, bringing up the next generations here. Again, the deadline to file is September 3rd. That's to get your name on the ballot. I believe they file through Kelly at the school district, or is that...
They can get information there, but they also will have to file at the county
at the, county, yeah, at county the election office.
Office. Yep.
And then election day will be November 2nd. And here on KFY, we will be interviewing candidates in the contested races. I mean, they're contested. So, Lonnie, we might have you back on here sooner than later. So let's wait and see.
Yeah.
With that, I want to say thank you, Tom Albertson, Superintendent of Schools for the Lake Ponderay School District, and Lonnie Williams, School Trustee. Really appreciate you taking time to talk with us.
Right. Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate you having us. Thank you very much.